I think before we start, we're all Chelsea fans here. We all have our own opinions. We all have our own feelings towards what's been going on, and we'll just have to respect and agree to disagree with whatever we say. I think that should be stressed.
Except for you and me, Collins.
Yeah, no, you can fuck right off, Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's only fitting to start this episode off just with a big, deep sigh, because, oh man.
Oh, you are teeing this up so good.
Enzo, to me, looks like a more agile, basically a young Chess Fabregas.
A Rolls Royce, man. Gotta sell it.
Messi is the Jorginho of international football. That was a dumb take.
To another episode of Flag Stays Down podcast, Sub-Zero edition. Boys, we're staying warm. At least we're trying to. It's full house tonight. You got me, Andy. You got Parker out in the Rockies. I'm freezing a couple days ago. I don't know how it is out there now. And then you got Matt here in Milwaukee, where it's what, negative 10? Parker, how you doing?
It's still pretty cold here, guys. Polar vortex just about everywhere except for Florida. It seems like it's pretty cold, and you don't really get to see NFL games canceled or rescheduled for that matter. So the Buffalo game up there, seems like a shit show full of snow as well. So it's a bit chilly, so chilly that my smoker didn't fire up on Saturday, and that really pissed me off. So I have my smoker inside right now, de-thawing, so I can wake up tomorrow and smoke the pork butt that I tried to smoke on Saturday, because it's been far too long. And when you get everything ready and you up early for the match already, and it's just like kind of a kick in the teeth, but that's all right. That's the worst of our problems, and we're doing all right, boys. So weekend good. I got to check something off my bucket list this week, which was cool. I got to go to a Blackhawks game. So I flew down to Chicago, met up with my brother who lives down there, and then my other brother drove in from Wisconsin. So the three boys, and then we met our two cousins who live in Milwaukee and Chicago as well for a Blackhawks game. So it was fun. I've never been to the United Center. Always wanted to go there. It's been a bucket list arena for me. And the Blackhawks, even when they're not good, and even when their star player is out with a broken jaw, they still have a rocking good time. So it's fun atmosphere and fun time to get to see a game. So it's just been kind of hockey palooza for me recently. I've been to more hockey this year than I have the past like 2 or 3 years combined, so it's been kind of fun. But yeah, it's a 3-day weekend here, because we have MLK day off tomorrow. So it's nice potting here, and then I get to hang out for the night, and then and wake up and have another day to kind of kick it and do whatever. So it's always nice to get those 3-day weekends, especially after a pretty busy time for me at work. So life's good, boys. Matt, how are you doing?
Doing good. Surviving, I guess is the right way to put it, with the winter weather. Spent 3 hours yesterday just snow blowing my driveway and the lovely plows that come through in the middle of the night. So leave about 2 feet of snow right at the entryway. And of course, everything freezes even more overnight. So trying to chip away at all that is a lot of fun. And then I helped out my dad today. He needed help roof raking. So I was over there doing that today. Yeah. And it was a full house. Finally, for the first time in what seems like forever. So my wife wasn't working. So we got to just kind of hang out and just do a bunch of stuff. And yeah, all in all, good weekend. Can't really complain too much. Boys got a win. So all is good. Collins, how are you surviving the polar vortex?
you know, snowpocalypse and then the winter and then the polar vortex. But yeah, no, I don't own a snowblower. So Matt, I had to shovel myself out yesterday, which was a big pain in the ass. And then yeah, today it all freezes. But Parker, I don't have an electric smoker. I've got the old school charcoal one. So went out there in the negative 20 wind chill today, smoked up some ribs, smoked some baked potatoes. Oh man, I miss smoking. I need to get back into that. Aiden's all excited about it. And I think we're going to do some brisket or some pork butt next weekend. But yeah, just staying positive as the winter blues come here. I do real quick, speaking of staying positive, want to give a quick shout out. Enjoy the off season to the Dallas Cowboys. They weren't them boys today. Green Bay Packers on to the next round. It's a good weekend. Win against Fulham, win against the Cowboys. Doesn't get any better than that.
One could say that, you know, maybe love is in the air. You know, just it's possible. Just feels that way.
Love it. Love it. And I want to give another quick shout out to our boy Joe Mach, who's been on the pod a couple times. Him and I texting back and forth during the Packer game today. And quote of the day from him is, I love the dumb look on Mike McCarthy's face. I do too. I do too, Joe. Let's go from American football.
Real quick about that. I don't know if you guys caught it. The montage of all the disappointed faces when they came back from commercial break, like halfway through the fourth quarter. Fantastic. Players, coaches, Jerry Jones, everybody. Beautiful to see.
If you get a chance, check out the Twitter feed for the Dan Le Batard show. They post all the GIFs and all the disappointed faces and all the Stephen A. reactions. It's a great follow on Cowboy game days. But let's turn to world football here, to some footy. We had two Chelsea matches this week. Parker reminded me that there was a second one, which was a loss. 1-0 loss at Borough in the first leg of the Carabao Cup semifinals. And then a 1-0 win over Fulham in the Premier League put us up to eighth temporarily. I believe we're down to ninth now, but we're in the top half of the table. Let's go. So with all that, Parker, what are your reactions to just in general to the week that was in Chelsea Blue?
Yeah, I've got a couple just quick thoughts. One, we did not lose to Middlesbrough. We are losing to Middlesbrough. I will continue to remind people that. I know the full-time whistle happens, but that's just halftime of the home and away leg. And we've been in situations like that before in cup matches. We've been down in cup matches, and then we come home, play the second leg at Stamford Bridge, and different team likes to show up. So, you know, I know a lot of people like to make a big deal out of losing to Middlesbrough. I get it. We did not look great, right? It was a pretty piss poor effort, to be completely honest. But we're only down 1-0 in the semifinals of a cup match against Middlesbrough. Like, am I too terribly worried? No. I think we have, you know, the skill and caliber to pull it off. And we have a nice break here. I don't think we play for, I think, 9 days from today, so 10 days from yesterday. And so that second half tie is going to be after 10 days of rest and some figuring out. So I'm excited that we get a bit of a break in January, which doesn't seem to happen too often for us, and, you know, take it to Middlesbrough. Second thing is, you know, again, people like to say, you know, Chelsea winning 1-0 wasn't great. They should be winning by more, blah, blah, blah. It's just Fulham. But we have such bad memories as fans, it seems. Like, we were losing to teams like Fulham earlier this year, even, and we're beating them now. And I know that this run of form that we've been on, what is it, like 5 out of the last 6 Premier League matches, something like that. I know it hasn't been against City and Liverpool and Newcastle. Like, I get it. Trust me, I do. But it's like, they're beating teams that they're supposed to be beating. Like, let's be happy about that. Like, let's understand that there's room to grow, that there's room for improvement. and the team is going to go through pockets of games, call it 30 minutes of games, where they don't look great and they don't play to their best ability and they don't finish chances, things like that. But for us, figuring out life without Nicholas Jackson for a bit and we're still winning games is decent to me. So I'm trying to focus on the positives of at least we're not losing and we're not drawing. We're still winning games. And I know the Middlesbrough loss stings, but it's not over yet. So we still have a chance to pull that one back and take it, you know, and still move forward in the cup. You know, not all is lost there. That wasn't a must win for us. So we're down 1-0. Great. We can still pull it back. So overall, even with a loss in the middle of the week, I still think it was a really positive week and we're starting to build some momentum.
I'm seeing a lot of positives. First positive being that I did not watch the Middlesbrough game. According to the both of you, I am very lucky in that regard. So I'm going to take your word for it and I will not watch it. The Fulham game was interesting. Again, it's 3 points, right? 3 points is 3 points. Doesn't matter how you get it. Sometimes you have to win ugly, and we're winning at times very, very ugly. But it still counts. Yes, there's still parts of the match, whether it's an entire half or even more than a half, where it's just like, what the hell are we doing? Like, everything just looks slow. We're just back past City, and it's painful to watch, but you get the result at the end. So again, if it's ugly, doesn't matter. It's still 3 points. I do like that point, Parker, you know, kind of surviving without our main number nine, with Nico Jackson out at AFCON. But even with Nicholas Jackson, like, we're still getting goals from all over the place. I think that's the big thing. And it's not necessarily like how it used to be, right? Where it was like Chills and Reese are leading goal scorers, right? It's not like that anymore. Like, our attack is actually producing a little bit more. And so I like to see it, but everything's distributed, right? We're not solely dependent on one specific player. You know, Cole Palmer now leads the team in goals. So, like, he's doing his part. You know, and Raz was off to a good start. He's gotten a little streaky over the last month or so, but, you know, Noni coming in and stepping up and doing his thing. So things are looking good, but again, it's going to be a process. And I think you take the small victories when you can. I think Fulham is one of those. Yes, on paper, we should be probably 80% of Premier League teams. On paper, yeah, we should. Not always a reality. But it's good to see that we're able to pull out these wins that don't seem big, but they actually are in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and you look at, you know, Fulham specifically, and that's a team that has been together for a while. You know, really the only player they're missing from last year is Mitrovic. And you could see that, you know, when they were in attack, they looked very fluid. They looked on the same page. We still at times look very disjointed. So I think what this week shows is that the raw talent is there. The potential is there. It's just a matter of coaching them up. And so my biggest takeaway from the week is, what are we doing on the coaching front here? I'm not poach out. I know after the Middlesbrough game, I was angry. But I'm questioning the manager, and that, you know, what are we doing positionally with players? Why is Levi Colwill still playing as a left back? You know, why is Cole Palmer playing as a false nine? Why do we have people playing in the positions that they're playing with? Where has Mihailo Mudrik been? He was on a great run of form and, you know, bruised his knee, I think was the issue. And now he's been out for 4 weeks, but he's been on the bench. So he's clearly ready to play. I just don't know personnel wise exactly what we're doing. And so that's my biggest takeaway is, why are we not playing our best players in their best positions?
Mudrick did come in as a sub in the Middlesbrough match.
He did. He did. But that was his, I think, his only appearance in the last four games, right? Yeah. And Raz has looked good at times, I will say, on the left. Noni's looked great, except for the Middlesbrough match, when he crossed the ball to no one after looking up and seeing no one. But you'd figure Mudrick, on a great run of form, would be able to step in on that left wing when Raz has been as up and down as he has been. But that's me looking from the outside in, right? All right. Well, looking in on all that, and a lot of it is injury driven. We do have two players coming back from injury and are back now from injury. Ben Chilwell coming back, getting subbed on in the second half of the Fulham match. Carney Chukwuemeka, my guy, also getting subbed in the second half of that match, are both back after long-term injuries. I believe both last appeared in August, which is just astounding to me. 5 months out. What kind of impact does this have now in the second half of the season?
It's big, specifically for the left back. We've been talking about a left back and do we need a left back and things like that for a long time. I still think we do, given the recent injury history with Chilwell and the stretches that he's been out. Again, not necessarily like his fault. It's not like he wanted, new ACLs, wasn't on his Christmas list or anything like that. But like these things happen, and you need to be able to account for these situations. I still think it is a target, but it's good to see him back. Right, we've been, I wouldn't say complaining, but we have been critical of Levi Colwell at that left back position. And we didn't really have any other options, and we definitely didn't with Mattson going on loan. So it was just Levi Colwell. Having Chills back, I think that takes the pressure off of Levi. I think that he can go back to doing his thing at center back, where he's more comfortable, definitely. And then Chills can do what he needs to do and kind of get back on a working page with, Mudrick, Raz, whoever's going to be out on that left. I think we'll see more positivity down that left. I know we've kind of been a little bit skeptical about, we're usually attacking from the right, not so much the left. But I think that helps tremendously, right? Because we won't see Levi bombing down the left or doing anything like that. So I definitely think that helps open up a lot of things down there and just makes us more dynamic when we start looking at attack and which way we can go through. So I'm very happy about that. And then Carney, he was on a great run before he got injured. It sucks that it happened, but again, with all the injuries that we've had, it's like, well, all right, shit happens. It's got to be next man up. But I'm hoping that he can find his way back into this team, especially with the time that he's missed and how other people have kind of grown into their roles and have it a little bit more solidified. He was kind of one of those players that at the beginning of the season, we didn't really know where he would fit, or what his best position would be. I still think that there is that debate. But now it's going to be, I think, an even tougher road back for him to try and solidify a position in the starting 11.
I'll take it a step further from you, Matt. Like, I don't even think it's like a debate of where his best position is. It's where in the pitch can he be? Like, where can we play him? Where does he fit the bill? And when I look at our team on paper, it's hard for me to see the way we line up. It's hard for me to see where he's unseating people. To me, he's the pure definition of a squad player. He's Ruben Loftus-Cheek 2.0 to me, and he's our Swiss Army knife type player that can fit in a lot of different areas, can plug holes where needed, but isn't going to be our best 11 cup final type person that we have to see in there. I enjoyed what we saw out of him, and I think he's you know, showing you was able to show some of the why I have some smoke behind my name, why I get the looks that I do, kind of that prowess, that technical ability. He's big, he's quick, and he's got good feet. And so I think, you know, the one goal that he had was pretty great. Like, it was a pretty solid goal. I know that could be lightning in a bottle. It could be the best goal he ever scores. And, you know, we're still talking about it 4 years from now. Like, hey, remember that goal? That one? But I'm hopeful that he still has a bright, long career ahead of him. So he's the tricky one. But for me, like you said, Matt, the really big impact is Chills. Chills has been one of our most impactful players the past 2-3 seasons. He's our vice captain. He's there for a reason. I really do like that he comes in the game and gets the armband. That might be overlooked and not talked about a lot, but I think that's a really big sign of respect. And I think coming into a game after 70 minutes and after not having played for a while, like, he still gets the armband. I think that's it's a big deal. And he's one of our oldest players. He's also one of our oldest looking players. It was funny to see him out there, and I'm like, oh my God, we have another old man out there. There's another Silva-esque player that looks older than, you know, 20 on the pitch for Chelsea. This is wild. I'm used to seeing the whole group of kids. But I've talked about this a little bit before, but I think when you look back to preseason of how Chelsea lined up, and since the injuries, we haven't seen it line up this way, or actually since just week one period, Poch comes out in a back four, and we've not really lined up in anything but a back four. And I think injuries has something to play into that. With Melo Gusto having shown really strong ability to, I guess, for lack of better words, mimic Reece James's game of getting up and down that right side, Chills can do the same on the left. And I think we're going to see some looks at our back three with two wing back system, just to give different looks to different teams. That way we can attack more on the flanks, you know, more through the outside, less through the middle, be more compact in the center of the pitch, which I think will help us win those midfield battles a little bit more, where Caicedo and Enzo can kind of stay more centrally focused and don't have to get as far up, and they can kind of stay back a little bit more because the wingbacks are the ones kind of driving things down the left and right side. So I think you see looks like that. I think every so often you're going to get different looks like that, just to switch it up and play to different people's strengths. Fun thing about that is when you do certain things like that, it could open up for Carney, where if you want to get him in a game, you can kind of tweak the lineup around a little bit and move some of the pieces around. And considering we don't have a striker, we don't have to worry about that, because we don't have to line up with a true number nine, because we don't really have a true number nine right now until we get Benzema, which I know you want to talk about, Collins, but yeah, Chills is great. Chills is a really big impact, and one that I don't think any of us really talked about for the past 5 months since he's been out, really. I mean, we haven't really mentioned his name as a big missing piece because we've had people kind of slot in and do decent jobs. I think we'll really kind of be like, oh yeah, I remember why we were talking about him being who he was, right? Leading the team in assists and goals, like Matt, you predicted. Just one of those really big impact kind of players.
Yeah, I would love Benzema on a 6-month loan. You know, he hasn't shown up to team training. He's not being included in the traveling squad as whatever club he's with is going out for training in Doha. But he's a guy that I've literally been watching since he was at the you know, in the reserves for Lyon back in like 04. So I would love that. But that's not what we're talking about right now. Chilwell coming back is good, because like I mentioned earlier, Levi Colwill at left back is not it. It's just not. Malo Gusto has been fine there, but then we don't have a right back. And Axel De Sassi is okay there, but he doesn't contribute anything going forward. So, you know, Chills is definitely the biggest kind of pressure release in terms of injuries. Chukwuemeka, I will say I am more thrilled about coming back. Chilwell is more of a I'm relieved. Chukwuemeka is I'm excited. He was in a good run of form before he got injured. And now, granted, he's been out for 5 months. That run of form doesn't mean shit now. But he was a 19-year-old that we spent £20 million on. He was one of the first young players that we signed under this regime. And honestly, I think he does a little bit of I feel like Matt's going to hate this, but he does what Connor does. He runs. He'll track you down. He'll be a dog. But then he also does what Cole Palmer does. He can dribble at you. He can distribute. He can place a shot. Now, it's not always at the level of Cole Palmer, right? But his running is at the level of Connor Gallagher. So basically what I'm saying is I want Connor Gallagher out of the starting 11. Cole Palmer would be my preference as the number 10. But Kearney offers another option. And we are right now lacking in terms of midfield depth, especially with Big Les out. Andre Santos is back, but not really. He's back, but he's in Brazil. And so, you know, it's really just Enzo, Caicedo, Gallagher, and now Kearney. Because Palmer is basically an attacker at this point in the season. So gives us depth, gives us options, gives us different things to look at than what we currently have. And as I've mentioned a million times on this pod before, if you can mix up what you're throwing at a defense, not only if you can mix up what you're throwing at me as a fan, but if you can mix up what you're throwing at a defense, if you can give them different looks, different options, Kearney will give that to you. Connor's very one-dimensional. I don't want to say Cole Palmer's one-dimensional, but we know what to expect out of Cole Palmer. Caicedo is one-dimensional. Enzo is multifaceted, but overall, you know, he's a distributor. Kearney kind of does a little bit of everything. So it's a nice Swiss Army knife to have available, especially with Middlesbrough coming up here, a team that we struggled to break down in the midfield. So outside of those two, we do have a couple players coming back. We're not coming back, but back in, what are they called, rehab. And Nkunku is going to be out long-term, well, possibly long-term, depending on how these next 9 days go. They're talking about Big Les maybe coming back in a matter of weeks here. Cucurella is going to be out long-term as well. And then Lavia, they're expecting, I've seen anything from 2 all the way up to 8 weeks. So who is coming through next in terms of injury that you are excited to see come back?
Anybody?
Everybody. the two, I mean, Nkunku is such a big bummer to me. Like, he hasn't been able to get going really at all this year. I don't want to hear anyone talk about Lavia until I actually see him on the pitch, because I am convinced that he's not even a real person at this point, because I haven't seen him. At least for Nkunku, I saw him for a half a second. He scored a goal in a meeting, down 2-0 kind of a goal. But at least he's real. At least I've seen him on the pitch. Lavia, doesn't exist to me. But the one I'm excited for, that I don't know if you mentioned or not, but Fofana, I'm excited to see come back, just because I think people have forgotten about him because he has been out so long. And I think he is a great center back and will be a great center back. And I think that's like the passing of the torch from Silva to Fofana eventually. When Silva no longer plays for us, I think the guy that we lean on for stability will be Fofana in years to come.
Yeah, I was going to say Fofana as well, especially with kind of our center back situation right now. Benoit hasn't really been included too much. We were very high on him last season, and, he obviously was recovering from an injury and just hasn't really made the impact that we were hoping that he would make when he's had his chances. So, you know, then you look at DeSasi, Silva, Colwell. Colwell has been playing left back for half the season, so that makes it very tough. And even when he was kind of at center back, that's when his kind of rough run of form started. I think that was what, like 2 months ago, where he was kind of the main player at fault for a lot of goals. But I think that's huge for solidifying our center backs, is getting Fofana back. So I'm super excited to see when he does come back. That's primarily my big one. I mean, Les didn't really play a ton. Again, I don't know where you'd slot him in this lineup. He would be just an off the bench guy, give somebody a breather. But yeah, I don't know. There's just a lot of these players that we have on the bench, or that we have that are injured. It's like, okay, when do they come back? And when they come back with the team that we have right now and how much everybody's been playing, like, do they slot directly in, or is this something where we just kind of ease them back in and see what happens, see how things work out? I think it's really tough at this point in the season, especially when you've been out for so long, to try and come back and fit into this team when a good portion of them have been playing together for a while now.
And unlike Parker, I am excited to see Lavia come back. I think that gives Caicedo a little bit of a breather. Caicedo has played all but two of our matches this year. The last game I remember him missing out on, I think, was Christmas Eve against Wolves. The other one must have been, God, maybe second or third match of the year, something like that. But the guy needs a break, a little breather here and there. And Lavia is that kind of guy to fill into that number six role. But for chaos sake, you all know I love chaos. Robert Sanchez comes back next week.
Fucking knew it. God damn it.
I'm not saying that's the most excited I am for anybody to come back. But I am curious what you guys think. We've now seen Petrovic in six matches. Robert Sanchez has played in 16. So I think we have a decent sample size for both. Now, granted, Petrovic hasn't played the big dogs. I think he played Man U. That was about it. When Sanchez comes back, what do you do? Or do you do a Kepa Mendy situation where you just kind of go with the flow on that day? You go with the vibe.
I'm all for the vibe. It's a really great question, because Petrovic hasn't really messed up much. He's done fairly well. I agree that his opposition hasn't been fantastic, but like, he made a big save in the Fulham match. Like, I don't think he's made any like wow saves, like just mind-blowing saves, but he's made good saves, I think, in a lot of the matches that I've watched. So goalies can be like hot hands, right? You ride them until they screw up, and then you kind of switch them out, and then you kind of go from there. So I wouldn't mind seeing Petrovic until he proves otherwise. Ride the hot hand, but regardless, I think it's nice that Sanchez knows and understands that his number one spot isn't a lock, which causes you to elevate your game. I think competition is the best thing for a team, and it avoids complacency in that spot. So regardless of if Sanchez gets the gig when he comes back, he knows that if he screws up, like, someone is waiting in the wings who did a good job replacing me when I was out. Like, he'll be on the hot seat. So it'll cause him to elevate his game or not, and then we figure it out.
So I don't necessarily think we give Petrovic enough credit. And what I mean by that is, he came over from the MLS straight into a large Premier League side, a large European side, and was said, hey, go be our keeper. He's done extremely well given that
kind of comparison. MLS is nothing compared to Premier League, right? That's all. That's a cakewalk. He has come in and done, I think, an exceptional job given the circumstances. I think if you were to ask him start of the season, do you think you'll play? His answer probably would have been no. That's just what I think. But he has been asked to perform and he has performed. I think as of right now, he has not done anything to lose a grip on that number one position. Granted, it was a one out of one position, right? It was him or it was Bergstrom, who I think played like half a match in the preseason. So I think you ride Petrovic as long as you can, or till as long as he does make that mistake. And then I think that's when you can switch and go back to Bobby Sanchez, who, again, I hope that, Parker, to your point, that he sees this and he knows, like, okay, I have competition, time to put up or shut up and, you know, continue to grow and be even better. I'm hoping his distribution gets better. We all know where I stand on that. But right before his injury, he was doing much better, and we were starting to see why he was, you know, brought in to be that number one keeper at Chelsea. We started to see the great shot stopping ability and things like that. So I hope that he can continue that. But as of right now, I think it's Petrovic's to lose.
I'm torn. I need to see Jordy play some decent opposition. And I know he's made some okay saves, you know, some kind of run of the mill saves in our last few matches. But I don't want a Mendy and Kepa, a Ramsdale and Raya, et cetera situation. And you just looking at those two specific situations, you know, it became an issue of when Mendy went off to AFCON, Kepa stepped in, and then it was, well, who's your starter? And both suffered. Neither were the same after that. You look at Arsenal, David Raya was signed, and Arteta said, oh, no, there's no number one here. Since he's made the switch from Ramsdale to Raya, and he's kind of alternated back and forth, Arsenal have dropped points in 8 matches. I think that was like October that change was made. They were title contenders. Pick one. When Sanchez comes back, there has to be a clear number one. At this point, I'm okay with Petrovic. He's been good. His distribution's fine. He doesn't worry me in goal. I don't notice him really a whole ton. Sanchez, stellar shot saving, I will say. Distribution, as we've noted on this pod, has not been great. And so I guess it's a matter of what does Poch want? Does Poch want, you know, excellent hands in goal and shitty distribution, or does he want above average kind of thing? Again, I don't care which. I want him to just choose one. I do not want a two-keeper solution. It's not an ideal thing. It's like having two quarterbacks in the NFL here. You can't do it.
I agree with that logic, man. No,
yeah, it's fair. I do too. I think the one thing, if you were to do something like that, you can't have a short, like the shortest leash in the world. Like if Sanchez makes, hopefully he doesn't, but if he were to make one of his distribution errors, you can't just be like, okay, no, you're done. Like it can't be, to me, it can't be that short of a leash. You have to give it a little bit of leeway, but yeah, I'm not in favor of that two keeper system. But yeah, I don't know. It's a very interesting dynamic to a very interesting team and season.
So Matt, just to follow up on that, how long of a leash is there? Keep in mind, you know, we're what, 21 games? We've got 17 games left in the season. The goal is Europe. Right now, we're 3 points out of Europa League spots, with West Ham having a game in hand. 9 points out of Champions League spots. How long is your leash on a keeper?
To me, it depends on what the mistake was. I think that's going to be arguably the biggest thing. You know, there's a big difference between, okay, you flubbed a pass versus you just didn't move when the ball was come at you in goal. Like, there's a big difference there. To me, I would give it probably 3 games. That's kind of the number when I was initially going through that and explaining it. That's kind of the number that stuck out to me. So I would see it probably at like a 3-game leash.
I'd be curious to see how he does through Liverpool, which is end of the month. It's the 31st of January. It solves a couple of things. It gives him a couple games where he's sort of won the position, and then he gives him a chance against the people who are in first, and we'll see how he does. And I know that can be viewed as not super fair, because sometimes Liverpool scores goals that keepers have no business or chance to save, but it's kind of a no-lose situation. Either he comes out and plays great, or he doesn't, and then Sanchez kind of gets solidified as the number one in people's heads. So either way, I think you can learn a lot from playing that.
See, and my leash is shorter. And the reason being, our next 10 games, and this is, you know, through the end of this month, through the first week in April, play top four Villa, top four Liverpool, Wolves, who always give us a problem, City, Tottenham, Newcastle, Arsenal, and United. We talked about the gauntlet that we had earlier this year. This is double that. And, you know, if it's Sanchez or Petrovic come in and have a howler against Spurs, and then have to come back 6 days later and play City, you know, defend against City, that's not an ideal situation. I know I said I didn't want a two keeper solution, but shit, man, this is where we need to bring Scott on. Scott, or, you know, he's a goalkeeper master, but might need to play hot hand as we go through our next 10 matches here.
I like that. So I actually get to bring in a topic now, right? Because Collins, you get to talk about it. So in our group chat, when we were watching the game, they cut to Todd Boehly in the box, and who happens to sit next to him? It's Frank Lampard. And Collins was one to bring it up to the group that last time Frank was in the box, he was named interim manager the following week. And reminded us that he wanted to talk about Frank in the box. So I'll kick it to you, man. What are your thoughts on seeing Frank next to Mr. Boehly?
So awkward. I know Frank didn't get canned, but he didn't win a match in his, 10 games in charge. You know, I appreciate Frank coming back. I appreciate Boehly keeping the door open for him. I don't think being a manager is necessarily Frank's forte, we'll say. His talent ID and his passion for the club are his two strengths. You know, you read all the reports of, 7 years ago, and you can go back and double check these through Sky Sports and all this. Frank identified Caicedo when he was playing in South America. Frank identified Mudrik as a teenager. There's all these players that are big names, and, you know, a lot of them have since gone to Brighton or Arsenal or, you know, wherever. He wanted Tchouameni instead of Saul, or, you know, pointed out that one. Frank has a great eye for talent. We still don't have a sporting director, and now with Ineos coming in at Manchester United, it leads me to believe that Michael Edwards, who has been our target for better part of 2.5 years now, is heading to United. He's got previous relationships with Ineos, with Sir Jim Ratliff. I think Frank is your next director of football. His talent ID is phenomenal. Look at the youth players that he brought up. Look at the ones that he picked to come into the first team in his first stint as manager. Compared to the players that we've seen over or since then who have come up through the academy and have been kind of busts. And then again, you talk about a guy who can talk about his love for the club and the project and can really, I would assume, influence you on, hey, I want to join it. You know, he's a great recruiter. I would love to see Frank Lampard be your next director of football with Win Stanley and Lawrence Stewart reporting up to him.
So that's interesting. Like, what's so funny about Frank to me is like he wears two hats. He is ex-manager Frank Lampard, and he is also club legend Frank Lampard. And so when I see him in the box, like I don't always necessarily think it's business related per se. The same way, like if we saw John Terry or Didier Drogba in the box, like Chelsea legends, right? Like there's not necessarily. So it's interesting that that's the first place your mind goes on that. I don't think it's a bad idea. And I think like Frank's skills, as you said, they just might not be manager and they could be just better suited for something else. And I think, you know, that that idea probably came up mutually, right? Of I still want to be involved in the club, but a third stint as manager is probably not in the cards, or a long-term stint at manager is probably not in the cards. How can I contribute to it? So it's I'll just say, man, that's a pretty interesting thought. I don't hate that. The only worry is it's another job that he's unproven in, where we just don't know exactly how it's going to go. And he's a name that brings a lot of spotlight along with it. And so, I mean, people were talking about him literally today or yesterday, whenever City played, because De Bruyne passed him in assists whenever he played. So, you know, Frank is talked about as a Premier League legend, right? Like he's talked about everywhere. So anytime he gets brought up, it brings a kind of a circus of media along with it. But I think he's kind of been through the ringer a couple of times now and understands how to deal with it probably a little bit better. And I have to imagine the spotlight's a lot less bright as a director of football versus being a manager.
I hope he's just there as a Chelsea legend and that's it. That's kind of my whole thought on it. I agree, managing at least at the Premier League level right now is not for him. You know, maybe a little bit lower and maybe somewhere else, a different country maybe. It's just not his thing. At least we haven't really seen him be successful at that yet. I do think you need some sort of reputable former Chelsea player to kind of help instill those Chelsea values that we've talked about, that we know and love. You do need somebody like that. You know, not to say you're a clubhouse guy, but you need somebody like that, especially with this young talent that we have. Somebody steer them in the right direction, kind of lead them, show them what it's about. I think he'd do a great job at that. I just don't know in what capacity we, the Todd father, because him and I are on good terms. I don't know what capacity Bully would be comfortable giving him. So it's a very interesting thought. I just don't know necessarily what to make of it. It'd be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and I think in terms of that director of football position, I think it's something that we need at this moment. I think we have all the pieces around a director of football, right? You got Beydad Agbali, who's kind of your negotiator, your closer. You've got Win Stanley and Stewart, who are kind of your talent ID guys. You've got some of the other ex-Brighton people who are now in roles in terms of recruiting and scouting. But you don't have the one person heading up that department to say yes, you know, or no, or, you know, this is who we're going after. You know, give me a list of five guys. I'll tell you the three, you know, our short list there. And I think that's a role that Frank fits into perfectly. He doesn't have to man manage. He doesn't have to do anything tactically, which we've seen in both instances is not fantastic. But it's just that these former Chelsea legends, a lot of them we've seen had roles in the club under Roman, are now gone. Petr Cech being the main one, right? He was kind of, him and Marina were number one and two there. But you need that next crop of ex-Chelsea players who understand the club, who can connect with there's a connection with the fans, direct or indirect. But I think Frank fits that. You know, you look at some of the other options. John Terry, great motivator, great leader. I think he'd be a great assistant coach in or around Chelsea. He'd be a great youth academy guy. Ashley Cole has proven that he's a great assistant coach in several different roles. Joel Cole has found his calling as a pundit. Didier Drogba, political ambassador. So Frank, you know, why can't Frank Lampard be a director of football, I guess, is my question. To me, it seems like it'd be a good fit and something where, I don't know. You look at people who run Fortune 500 companies, and it's not necessarily that they're brainiacs and they're the best of the best, but they know how to put the right people around them. They have the right people around them. They have smart people around them. We have the smart people. We need the leader. And so I'm all for Frank there being there. And Matt, you may be right. It may have just been, Frank coming to watch the West London Derby. Maybe he's a big fan of the movie Argyle. I don't know. But it would be nice to see him back in a role in the club, just not as manager.
Maybe he makes a small cameo in the movie.
I don't even know what that fucking movie's about. It's just weird shit going on.
Either way, he's going to have a seat on John Obi Mikel's podcast because John Obi's been able to get some fun guests on that podcast. I did listen to the Mourinho episode, and it was everything that you would expect a Jose Mourinho podcast appearance to be. So if you guys haven't listened to it, and if any of our listeners haven't listened to it, it's phenomenal. It's just something else.
And this week I saw is my guy, Joel Cole. So it should be a good one. All right. Well, boys, let's turn to our polls for the week. We did not do one for Middlesbrough. I was still very salty about that result, so we just didn't post one. So let's turn to the Fulham match again, 1-0. Cole Palmer with the winner on a penalty. We'll start with our man of the match. You had four options. I feel like there was more than four options available, so feel free to write one in here. But the four options we provided on our X account: Thiago Silva, Enzo Fernandez, Cole Palmer, and Jordi Petrovic. Matt, where are you going?
I'm gonna go with a write-in. I will take Alfie the closer. I'm just kidding. I just wanted to see the look on Collins's face. For me, I would say it would be between Enzo and Cole Palmer. Obviously I would give the nod to Palmer just because he's the one that scored. But I mean, you really can't go wrong. But for me, I'll take the easy one. I'll take Cole Palmer.
Yeah, there are times I like to be creative and go against the grain, but the fact that Cole not only took the penalty, he also created it, because I don't know anyone that thought he wasn't shooting that ball, which is great because he's got that eye for goal, and I know he likes to put a lot of shots on target. That pass caught everybody off guard, and that's what won the penalty. So he put us in a great spot to have Raheem, do what he did to win it. And so the fact that he created it. He assisted the penalty, and then he took it and finished it. And he looked so damn confident up there with the ball at his feet for taking a penalty. You know, we've been really lucky in recent history to have guys who we rely on to take penalties well. And I never take it for granted because I know it's not a skill that everybody has the luxury of having. And when you need it, like in a game like Fulham, you have to convert it. Like there's no plan B for those. You have to convert it. And he did. And he's done a really phenomenal job at doing that for us.
Yeah, he is now past our top goal scorer in the Premier League from last year, Kai Havertz. He's got 9 goals on the year. I did go against the grain on X, and this is out there for the world to see. My man of the match was Dua Lipa. But no, I guess for the sake of this poll and for being for real, I'm going to go Enzo Fernandez. I said it last week. I think he's back to his best. Just pulling the strings. Just directing everything here. Oh, Parker's got the Enzo kit. Love it. Again, said it once, said it a million times. Enzo would be my hall pass. So he's my man of the match. All right.
On that note,
turning to our man to get the fuck out of here. Had 4 options again here. Oh no, you know, I'm sorry. Our results: Cole Palmer was the winner, 44%. Enzo second with 28%. Petrovic was 16%. Silva with 12%. Now turning to our man to get the fuck out of here. 4 options here. Armando Broya was not included because that might be a little bit of my bias, but. Here's your 4 options: Anthony Taylor, Argyle, Stoppage Time, or our Shooting Boots. Parker, we'll start with you. Where are you going?
Yeah, extra time was painful, and the fact that we almost conceded didn't help anything. But I think I went with Anthony Taylor, if I remember right. I look at the results and just the amount of yellow I see. Is a bit alarming on our side. And I think Fulham had 1 yellow card to our like 7 or something like that. So it fits the narrative. That's all I'll say about that.
Anthony Taylor. That's it.
Yep. That's a sweet boys. Anthony Taylor. It's like he remembered after 60 minutes. Hey, oh shit. This is Chelsea. I don't like them because that's when the yellow cards started raining in. And we are a podcast of the people. That's your winner of 56% of the vote. Shooting Boots 25, Argyle with 19, Stoppage Time surprisingly was 0. I am a little surprised by the Argyle result though, because there were a lot of seemingly match going fans pissed off about that. But it is what it is. I assume more money for the club, right?
It's got to be. If you're promoting a movie like that worldwide, yeah, you're trying to boost funds.
And in a world where we have financial fair play and we have a very public budget of what we've spent, and, you know, I think those same fans don't want to see Conor Gallagher get sold. Right? Like everyone wants to keep players. And when people talk about that, it's like, oh, the house is burning down, right? Like, it's just, we got to keep our players. Something's got to give, right, boys? Like, we got to raise funds somehow. And if it's a stupid crypto badge sponsor on our sleeve, and if it's promoting a movie, like, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Obviously the project has to work, so it's a little bit dependent on that, but I'm fine with it in the interim because I'd rather that than us having to do a fire sale of academy players that I don't want to see go.
And on that note, we also have a new sleeve sponsor as well. And I think they're replacing Whale Fin, but I think Bing X is also going to be the one replacing Trivago next year. So, and that, again, I think it's like 10 10 or 15 million more a year going with this new company. So again, you got to raise funds somehow, and especially in compared to American sports, the Wild West that is European football, you got to be able to support what you're trying to do. So it makes sense from a business standpoint.
All right, well, boys, we did have a bonus poll this week. I know, Parker, you turned off the match right after the match, so you didn't get to see Tim Howard being complete fucking ass. But our bonus poll is, who's the worst media personality to watch as a Chelsea fan? Here are your four options. Tim Howard, Craig Burley, Jamie O'Hara, Gary Neville. Parker, who's your pick?
So I had it on, and then Tim Howard literally started talking, and I heard like his first two sentences, and I was like, I have to turn this off. He just doesn't like to talk positively about Chelsea. It's for whatever reason, if it's vendetta or not, but he just doesn't like to give credit. And you know, we try to get together weekly and talk about the positives and the negatives, right? We talk about when the sky is falling and things aren't good, and we try to find the positives and look at 1-0 victories as wins, right? Like it's a win, it's 3 points. So it's hard to listen to him consistently. So he's my vote.
So for me, definitely Tim Howard. The thing about Craig Burley is that he's just an idiot for everybody. Just listening to him on ESPN FC, just for some of the random matches that I was watching this past weekend, he's just an idiot. He's just angry all the fucking time, and he just shits on anybody and everybody. I know he's a former Chelsea player and whatever, but he just talks out of his ass about anybody and anything. So for me, it's Tim Howard, because his unfiltered bias is blatantly obvious. Like he's not even trying. So it's going to be Tim Howard.
Tim Howard is the volume shooter in this group, just because we see Premier League Live, Premier League Mornings every single week. We only get to see Craig Burley when we play in the FA Cup and Carabao Cup. Jamie O'Hara, we only get to see clips of on X, because he's on Talk Sport. We don't get that here in America. And Gary Neville's just a fuck. I hate him. But Tim Howard is passive aggressive in what he does. Craig Burley is not subtle in the slightest. He gets my vote 100%, because it's literally anytime he opens his mouth when Chelsea plays, it's just spewing nonsense. Tim Howard at least tries to hide behind rationalism and eye test. Like he reminds me of you a little bit. but Craig Burley is just an ass, just through and through. So he gets my vote here, and he gets 54% of the vote in our poll. Jamie O'Hara at 22, Tim Howard at 14, and Gary Neville at 10. So I think the consensus is, because this is one of our most highly voted on polls, is just mute anytime any of these people come on. Then they'll stop talking about us, right?
I'm all for it.
All right. Well, make sure to check out our polls on X after every match. Check us out at FlagDownPod. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, Threads, all that good stuff. More, I'm sure there's more that I can't remember off the top of my head, but check us out at FlagDownPod. If you enjoyed listening to the podcast, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Just a reminder, Google Podcasts is leaving in February. Check us out on YouTube Music instead. Make sure to type in Dirty Sanchez. Apparently that's one of our biggest hits that takes you to our page. No, but you can check us out at FlagDownPod. So before we close this thing out, Matt, any closing thoughts?
We are not responsible for any other criteria that comes up if you do search Dirty Sanchez.
Parker, how about you?
Oh, that's what we're going with.
All right, well, boys, cheers to 3 points. Cheers to Dirty Sanchez.
Cheers.
Cheers, boys.